Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about trees, shrubs, and other woody ornamentals today with our guest, Laura Jull. Laura is a professor, extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. And she comes by every so often to talk about woody ornamentals with you and with me. You may have a favorite shrub or tree you have a question about. Maybe you're having a problem finding the right plant for a spot in your yard. Give a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And Laura Jull, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm glad to be here.
It's always a pleasure. It, you know, when we talk woody ornamentals, some people may say, well, what's a woody ornamental? So right up front, let's talk about that. What's the range here?
Well, the range, the woody ornamental part, it describes trees, shrubs, evergreens, vines, ground covers, anything with a stem that stays above the ground over a winter, doesn't die back. If it did die back, that would be a herbaceous plant, which are wonderful in the landscape, too.
Absolutely. Well, we have many people with questions for you. Should we dig right? Let's dig right in. Laura in Arpin up first. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling.
Hello. A couple of weeks ago, my mother-in-law received a flowering crab as a gift, and we planted it for her. And the leaves are turning reddish. Some of them are dropping. I was wondering, is this likely transplant stress, or should we be looking at something else?
When did you plant it?
About 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Okay. It sounds like it could be moisture stress, meaning it's not getting enough water. Newly planted trees and shrubs should be watered often, especially this time of year being so warm. Especially like last week, we had temperatures in the 90s, and some of these trees may need watering daily if the temperatures are that high.
So when we planted it, about 8 inches down, we hit heavy clay, and so we've been nervous about overwatering. Is it possible to overwater when you've got the clay there? Or,
Yeah, part of the problem is the tree's roots have not obviously grown out of the root ball yet, so only the moisture that's right in that root ball is what the tree can get. Regarding the hard clay subsoil, it's unfortunate because it impedes drainage. If you water too heavily or if there's a really heavy rain, it's going to puddle in the hole that you dug. Now, with the tree, I want to make sure that the actual flare, the root flare that comes off the trunk, you know how it goes from trunk to root tissue?
Yep.
That needs to be right at the soil line, not buried. And
right. We kept it right at the surface of what it was in the pot. We didn't
actually, a lot of times in the pot, it's too deep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's really important. And were you able at all to stretch out the roots in the pot?
We did some cutting and then tried to kind of pull them out of that, you know, how they kind of circle around the pot. We did try to pull them out of that round.
Yeah, that's very important because especially with trees, those roots can continue to circle around and around. So it's very important to stretch them out and lay them out so that they're not going to start to curl around the rest of the root system. Another thing, have you applied mulch?
Not yet.
Okay, mulch is really a very, very good thing, but it can be a bad thing if it's overdone. Apply about 3 inches and keep it away from the trunk of the tree at all costs. Don't pile it on the trunk. I see this all the time around town, homeowners as well as
even at businesses.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how can I say this nicely? Landscape businesses that unfortunately are promoting this heavy, I call it mulch volcanoes. It looks ridiculous, and it's actually doing more harm to the tree than good by over-application of bark mulch that touches the trunk of the tree.
Yeah,
the trunk stays wet too long. But I would check on the moisture. Actually put your finger right in the root ball of the tree that you just planted, and it should be moist. And if it's dry as a bone, that's what's going on. It sounds like it's a drought issue.
Yeah, could well be. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Laura. I hate to even look when I drive by some of these places with those cones.
Oh, it's up ridiculous.
I was at a hotel, a motel in Door County, and I commented on that. I said, you know, that's really not good for the trees. I really strongly suggest you to. And, you know, they looked at me like, what do you know?
Yeah.
So I came back the next year, and they were still there, and the trees weren't looking as good. Anyway, let's turn to Betsy next. Betsy's in Dodgeville. Hi, Betsy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have a beautiful tamarack / larch that 11 years ago I plucked from my brother's bog on Lake Superior, and it was about 2.5 feet tall. It's now, 15 to 20 feet tall, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful, et cetera, et cetera. But in the wind last week, it is now leaning painfully over. It hurts me to look at it.
Yeah, and so is there a way to ease it back straight up, Laura, or will it do it on its own? What's the angle that it's leaning on?
It's
not 45.
Leaning to the east, and the top is probably at a 90-degree angle.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And so you planted this when? When did you plant this tree?
11 years ago.
11 years ago. Oh, boy.
15 feet tall.
That is actually surprising that it's leaning so much. At 11 years old, it's already established in the soil. And if you try to dig it up, you're obviously going to be cutting through a lot of the roots.
I was going to ask, should I have the tree cutter cut it off at a third off or a half off or something?
Well, you ruin the tree form. I don't recommend that. It would look bizarre.
It would look worse than it does now.
Especially with larches, they have a pretty dominant straight terminal leader,
yes.
Their trunk.
Yes, it surprised me very much.
Yeah, how high were your winds?
40, 50?
Well, we had bad storms, and, okay. You know, I didn't think much of it until I saw the tree.
Yeah. Yeah, without actually seeing the tree, I can't make a definitive, try to stake it. Or if it's too far over, then it's probably, you know, anything you do to dig up an 11-year-old tree.
Oh, no, I don't, I wouldn't do that. I would like to save it because my dear brother gave it to me right after my husband died, and now my dear brother has died. So I would like to, even if it looks horrible, I would like to keep it.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Do you know of any arborists in your area?
No, but the local tree cutter lives across the street.
Yeah, he might
cut
be
it wherever I ask him. I just think it's going to, you know, I don't know if it's a rip somewhere. It isn't. And I thought at first, well, maybe it needed more water because, of course, the larch grow like that. And I gave it more water, but nothing's really happened.
But it's only been, what, 2 weeks?
A week.
A week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just cross my fingers?
Well, you can't stake it. But again, you're going if it's leaning so much, I'm not at the site, so I don't know how bad it is. So it's really hard to make a judgment call on this. Anytime a tree is leaning that bad, it's usually due to a bad storm or the tree never established itself with a good enough root system to hold it up. But that's usually on much younger trees.
Well, when I planted it, was so small. Plenty of
it must have been
perennials
good.
Planted around the bottom, old perennials. I don't do anything with them.
Yeah. Well, you might take, Betsy, have you got a cell phone camera?
Not a good one, Larry. I could take it with my iPad.
Shoot it to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
I'll try to do that.
And we'll take a look at it.
Well, I'll try
that.
To
might
do
help.
That.
Okay.
I'm not technically astute, but I will try. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
And it grew, you know, 11 years, it went from a couple feet to 15 feet, so...
Yeah, it's pretty well established, and, you know, digging it up, you're going to be destroying a lot of the root system by doing that.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to Alice in New London next. Alice, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, we have a very small backyard, and we had at least four huge shade trees, one of them 60 foot tall. And with the weather changes and the severe storms we've been having, I really want to replace them with smaller scale ornamentals. But we're having a tough time because at least three of the stumps from the tree, even though they were ground, they only, you know, grinded off to the lawn level. And then what's underground is even worse. So we've been working at trying to remove it. And I'm wondering how much of that do I have to remove to be able to plant another smaller ornamental, for instance, in its place.
Okay. It'll take years for those roots to eventually break down to the point where you can plant at the exact same location. When it comes to planting, do you have to have those trees right at that exact location?
Either exactly or slightly off, simply because the yard is so small, we have very few choices.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because it's going to be almost impossible to plant something in that exact same location. Mm. And trying to dig up all the roots, that's going to take you a long time.
Can you move five feet?
No, not that far. Although we've been chopping and burning one stump. But it, as you say, it's been very, very slow.
Yeah, and it's quite labor intensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there, you know, we avoid chemicals when we can here. Is there a chemical that can be applied to that, Laura? I was trying to rack my brain to think.
Yeah, I've heard of it before, but to be honest, I can't remember the name. And I'm not sure of its effectiveness or is it residual in the soil or not. I don't know. I've never used the product. I would suggest contacting an International Society of Arboriculture, which acronym is ISA, Certified Arborist. And an ISA Certified Arborist has gone through testing, study skills, and all different aspects of arboriculture. I recommend, and there's plenty of them in Wisconsin, to hire one because there are a lot of people out there that call themselves arborists and are not ISA certified and really could do a lot of harm to some trees. I have seen that. An ISA certified arborist has kind of a code of ethics, and hopefully they will abide by that. And you can find a list of certified arborists on the Wisconsin Arborist Association, or WAA, website. And you can search for a certified arborist by your county, which is very, very convenient. And so just Google Wisconsin Arborist Association and go to their website, and they have a link to certified arborists for hire.
Very good advice. Thank you so much, Alice, for calling. Good luck to you. Laura Jowell, our guest today, professor, UW Extension specialist in the Department of Horticulture, specializing in woody ornamentals. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with Laura Jowell. And talking care for your woody ornamentals, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Sharon in Berlin next. Sharon, hi. Thank you for calling.
Many years ago, we had a tree that went down in wind. It was a spruce. And it was about 9 years old, so I don't know how tall that would be, probably. But my grandpa stood it back up because it was a sentimental tree. And I don't know what he did to the rest of it. He didn't cut anything. The tree stands today on the farm where it was.
Oh.
Good.
He may have staked it, you know, staked it up with some. You can do that. The 15-footer might be hard to move.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks, Sharon, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Kathleen, who emailed to say that she plans to plant an assortment of trees and shrubs on a berm. Should she plant directly into the berm or add to the dirt? She plans to mulch them to prevent runoff.
Oh, wonderful question. I myself have a large berm in my yard, and I would plant directly in the berm. Not sure what the soil is. I would want to know the soil, pH and type, and that would affect what you plant. If it's a very high pH, there are species you're going to want to stay away from. But yeah, you can plant right in the soil in the berm as long as it's decent soil. And again, keeping that root flare right at the soil line and not burying it.
Probably a soil test in order then?
Yes, definitely a soil test. I would get that. That can rule out a number of species that won't perform well if the soil isn't right.
Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. I know what the answer to the question is, but I want to know why. I don't like doing something unless I know the reason why. I have a rugosa rose, and I know with a hybrid tea, the thinking is that you want to, after they've bloomed, you want to cut five leaf branches under, and that's supposed to do the reblooming. Now, does that apply to rugosa, and is this just a wives' tale, or is it really the best way to do it?
Okay. When it comes to hybrid tea roses, it's not a wives' tale. You do want to prune the old dead flowers off. Otherwise, the rose will put more of its energy into producing a rose hip. And unless they're very colorful, it depletes the purpose of leaving them there. And yes, you want to do cut it back to where you see a leaf. It's a compound leaf, and the leaf will have either three or five leaflets, sometimes more. But you want to cut it back to when you see the five leaflets. And the reason why is if you only cut off the dead flower and don't prune it back a little bit farther, that the rose may continue to produce new leaves at the expense of producing flowers. Now, some people say, oh, that's not true. I've grown roses since I was a kid. And basically, when it comes to hybrid teas, I do think cutting it back to five leaflets is important. Now, with rugosa roses are a little bit different. They tend to only produce five leaflets. Occasionally, you'll see three leaflets. It really depends on the cultivar. But I usually prune it back a couple inches, and you'll be fine.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
You just got to watch for the Japanese beetles.
Yeah.
They love them.
Oh, yes, they sure do.
Ugh.
Anne in Milwaukee, let's turn to you now. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I have a very large silver maple in the backyard, which every year would rain down pounds and pounds and pounds of whirlybirds. This spring, a friend of ours tapped it for the sap to make syrup, and it has produced maybe 10% of the whirlybirds, which has been great because there's no cleanup. I'm wondering if tapping the tree had something to do with that.
It could. Now, silver maples are what we call dioecious, having separate male and female trees. One tree will be female, another tree will be male. And usually silver maples aren't tapped for syrup, but you can use silver maple. You need a lot more sap than you would, say, a sugar maple. Anytime you tap a tree, you are taking energy away from that tree because those carbohydrates are what the tree uses to produce leaves, flowers, and fruit. So perhaps tapping this tree led to less energy available for fruit production.
And so it's possible. And there could be other weather, a combination of things. But
some years are better than others.
Yeah, we've been there 20 years, and every year it's a giant cleanup. And this year it was nice. I mean, it was great. He got 10 or 12 gallons of sap, and I didn't have to clean anything up. And the tree looks fine. I mean, it looks just like every other year.
I'd be getting him back next year.
Yes, I will.
For sure. Thanks, Ann. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Denise in Lisbon, your turn. Hi, Denise.
Hello. I have a question about replacing a privacy hedge. Our backyard looks 90 degrees into our neighbor's backyard, and they recently needed to take down very mature 40-foot pine trees all along my backyard and their backyard. So the privacy is gone.
Hmm. Did these trees die?
They had a fungus, so they weren't in the best health.
Okay.
The problem is that they had a septic system failure and now need to go to a mound system. And the area that the mound system needs to go in, the trees had to be taken out.
Okay.
So it wouldn't interfere with that system, the new system.
Uh-huh.
So it's bare in my backyard.
Yeah.
I was looking into green giant arborvitae mainly because they grow so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But I was concerned about, you know, I don't want to ruin their new mound system planting something that would interrupt that.
Correct. I don't know the exact distance that you have to be away from the septic field or mound system before you can plant something.
Right.
I know you can't plant directly in the mound or septic area. So that's something you might want to find out. I don't know, Larry, do you know how far?
I know you can. Well, yeah, I know you can plant native, like prairie grasses, right on the top of a mound. The roots go right down, but I'm not sure about arborvitae, which would be a kind of a woodier sort of.
Mm-hmm. Generally, arborvitae don't have an aggressive root system like, say, a silver maple has. Where are you located again?
Located in the town of Lisbon, which is southeast Wisconsin, a zone 5. Depending.
Okay. That was an important question because Thuya Green Giant is a zone 5 plant. It's a hybrid, and you could plant that. You could plant some other our native Thuya occidentalis or northern arborvitae. There's a number of cultivars out there that are tall and can grow quickly to fill in that area.
That's what we're looking for, something that's going to grow very quickly. We can get privacy back.
Yes, I totally understand. And I'm not sure what local nursery or garden center you go to buy plants, but I've never been to a nursery that didn't have several cultivars of arborvitae. So if you can't find Green Giant, which is a harder one to find, you might want to go with something else,
mm-hmm.
a different cultivar.
Is there anything else that you can think of without an aggressive root system that might be?
There's also junipers, and the one that I can think of that is actually surprisingly fast-growing for a juniper is called Star Power Juniper.
Okay.
And it's an upright juniper. It's very spiky foliage, so the foliage is sharp on this one, but it's a nice kind of blue-green color, and it grows quite fast.
Okay.
And it can tolerate dry soils very well.
And do the deer like it?
No, the deer do not like the juniper. They do love arborvitae.
So you may have your decision made right there on the spot, Denise.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show as we take a look at woody ornamentals with Laura Jull from the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and the University of Wisconsin Extension. Great to have her along. And Charles emailed to say that the willow on the edge of his lake is dying, and he'd like advice on what would be a good replacement. It's obviously very wet.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a number of plants you could use. And he was in, I'm sorry, Larry, these small cities, I'm not sure where they're located in the state.
He did not say where he was located.
Okay. If he's in the southern part of the state, one of my favorite trees to plant near water is bald cypress.
Ah.
Bald cypress is a zone 5 plant, so it cannot be grown in the northern part of, or even in the mid-central part of the state. That's kind of iffy. I have seen some in Green Bay that mm-hmm. are doing very well. It's a tree that loves water. It doesn't have to have be planted near water, but it's one that actually naturally grows in water. And it will produce what's called cypress knees. It doesn't do that in the landscape. It's only when it's planted near or in water. And those cypress knees are these outgrowths that come out of the ground. And they're nothing to worry about. They're small. They're not huge. But in a lawn situation, they don't produce. They tend not to produce that. But it's a great tree. The only issue is if the pH, soil pH, is too high, bald cypress can get chlorotic.
Ah, okay. I was remembering our neighbor, our next door neighbor on Lake Monona had a huge willow that had to come down, and he waited till winter, and when the ice was good and thick, then they cut it down, and then it was a lot easier to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that very well.
Yeah, willows have a lot of disease problems.
Yeah,
and trunk decay issues.
Ellie in Eau Claire. It's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on, Larry.
Sure.
I just bought a severely discounted nine-bark tree at a nursery sale, and we planted it a couple days ago. I've been watering it every day. I've been careful about spreading the roots out, et cetera, et cetera. But in researching the tree online, I run across nine-bark shrubbery, but not nine-bark trees
mm-hmm.
very often.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk to me a little bit about the nine-bark tree versus the nine-bark shrub and anything that I should be aware of?
Okay. Our native nine-bark is usually a shrub. And what some nurseries have done, and I've seen this, is they'll actually take a seedling of nine-bark or a cutting of nine-bark, and they'll prune off the side branches and grow it like a tree. And then as it gets to 4 feet tall, then they will graft a cultivar of nine bark, either a purple leaf cultivar, yellow leaf, whatever, on top.
Mm-hmm.
So it's technically not a tree, but it's growing like a tree. So that's nothing new. We've seen this in the landscape. You said it was severely discolored?
No, it's severely discounted.
It was cheap.
It was cheap. Okay. How does
I got it for $10.
Oh, that's a bargain.
It was severely discounted.
Yes. Is it a purple leaf?
It's a purple leaf, but there's a big hole in the back.
Hole in the back? Meaning in the trunk or in the...
No, I'm sorry. In the foliage itself. It looks like someone just took a big chunk out of the back end.
Yeah, it'll fill in. Nine bark is pretty quick growing. That will fill in. Make sure your location has full sun and open exposure, because nine bark is susceptible to powdery mildew.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, so keep the foliage dry. Don't use overhead irrigation. Make sure it's a nice, you know, I have several nine barks in my yard, the shrub ones, and one of my favorite cultivars is Summer Wine. It's actually a trademark name, but the Summer Wine nine bark is a little bit less susceptible to powdery mildew. Doesn't mean it can't get powdery mildew, but it's less susceptible.
Okay, one more question, if I could, please. There's a shoot coming up from the base of the tree. The tree itself is fastened to a small stick to keep it straight, and then there's another sap, you know, like a little sapling that's coming straight up that they have attached to the tree and to the stake that's holding the tree form itself, the trunk. And should I keep that?
Well, the one that's coming from the base of the tree is the root system sending up suckers. I would prune that off, because that will eventually overgrow the tree. And depending on what the rootstock they used, it could be just the normal green leaf form.
Okay.
You want to get rid of that. And the second one, you said it's coming off the trunk farther up?
No. It's just one stalk.
Okay.
It's coming straight up.
Yep.
But it's
But the nursery actually attached it to the trunk of the tree, you know, with some tape.
Oh.
Like they wanted it to grow that way.
Why they would do that.
I know. Yeah, the suckers coming from the base should be pruned off.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And Nick in Green Bay emailed to say he has a very overgrown burning bush. Wonders if it's okay to prune it now. He knows he should wait until winter, but he doesn't know if he's patient enough to wait until then.
If you want my honest opinion when it comes to burning bush, basil pruning and get rid of it. burning bush is very invasive. I have visited sites in Wisconsin where it was the entire understory was burning bush, which was choking out all the native trees and shrubs from germinating. There were no spring ephemerals at all. It's something to be aware of, especially if you live near a natural area. But birds actually eat the fruit. They fly away, and then they deposit the seed, and up comes a new burning bush. Similar to Japanese barberry, which is another invasive plant. However, with Japanese barberry, there are some cultivars that are less susceptible. Produce very few fruit, for example. When it comes to burning bush, we haven't found one yet that really produces less seed. There are some cultivars that might be, like ones called Little Moses, that have less, but it's not definitive. So if you want to keep the burning bush, I'm being sarcastic here, but if you want to keep the burning bush, I would do some selective pruning back to a lateral branch. And you can do this, especially with the height of a burning bush. You would prune it back to where you see a bud or another branch that's bigger than the one that you just removed. Burning bush do recover fairly well from heavy pruning. It's one of the few shrubs you can do that to.
Janet in Oak Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Janet. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, thank you very much for taking my call. Now that you were talking about invasive, I have a second question, if I could. First question is, I have a hickory, 6 service berries, a ginkgo, and 7 sunflower shrubs, 2 of those, that I think have frost damage, although my other concern is that perhaps it was an herbicide, but it's spread throughout my yard, which is an acre, so I'm thinking it was frost. What are the chances of, damage to these plants where they might die? Some of them are larger, and they mean a lot to me. And then my second question is, as far as invasive, is the barberry, the pillar one, is that considered to be an invasive species? Thank you.
The pillow one, I'm not
pillar?
Sure what.
Pillar.
Oh, pillar, yeah. Like Hellman, yes. Pillar?
Yeah, it grows taller and narrower than other one.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that one. While I'm answering your other question, I'm going to look up on my a publication that I have on what cultivars are more prone to producing fruit. So I'll try to answer that question as I'm answering the first one, if my brain will allow me. regarding the other issue, did the damage that you saw occur right after a hard frost?
We did have a hard frost. I'm in Oak Creek, which is very close to the lake. I'm probably about Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have a late frost. And then I noticed it, though, after someone came to do some yard, fertilize, and they did spray for weeds. Mm-hmm. And I noticed it about a week after. So, yes, we did have frost, but I don't know. I just wasn't looking for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's on a number of different plants, it could be frost damage, and trees recover from that all the time. That's, it's unfortunate you have some brown, I would assume you have browning branches.
No, they're just, the leaves are kind of turned under. They're a little bit curled. They just don't look good.
Okay, that could be herbicide injury. Herbicide drift. And herbicide drift happens when somebody sprays and it's too windy. Like today here in Madison, it's windy. You shouldn't be spraying anything more than a 5 to 10 mile per hour wind. It's just too windy, and the chances of hitting other plants. That happened to me in my yard. My next door neighbor hired a lawn care company, and they sprayed on a windy day, and I actually was out there yelling at them, and it was really windy. And sure enough, my linden out front got herbicide injury. And the tree looks great today, but the first year after the spray event, the leaves are all cupped, and they tend to curl under. So if you could send pictures to your county extension office, and I know you're in, is that Milwaukee County?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, Sharon Morrissey in Milwaukee County. Send pictures to her and have her take a look at them. That's actually the first step I recommend people do, is to contact their county extension office, and they a lot of times will know the answer. And if they don't, then they will contact me, and I'd be happy to look at it.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, let me answer her second
question.
Oh,
the other part. Yes, go ahead.
Hellman Pillar, it's H-E-L-M-O-N-D, Pillar, it has low barberry invasiveness. It doesn't produce very many fruit. So it's okay.
There we go.
Thank you very much. Makes me feel better then.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Do you have a list of all of the horticulture agents or the ag agents who specialize in horticulture as well?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, but it changes so much. We've had a number of extension clientele leave. Either retire or leave for a different position elsewhere. There aren't very many in the state that specialize in horticulture. We have some, especially in the Southeast District, like Sharon Morrissey, Milwaukee, she does specialize in horticulture. That's her only, I shouldn't say only, that's a big job, but that's her area that she programs in.
Tam in Hartford has something for us. Hi, Tam. Thanks for calling.
Hi. We are putting in a new shrub bed on the west side of our house, and we have some blueberries we're going to transplant over there, and we wanted to put some lingonberries in. And I found a nursery that I could order from, but now they're not shipping until the end of September, they said, because of the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't aware of that. Are you aware of anywhere else? I mean, is that going to be the general rule?
Where again are you in the state?
In Hartford, so Southwest.
Hartford, okay. Yeah, you're in the southern part of the state. One of the things I would do before you do any planting or transplanting is get a soil test. Blueberries need a pH, soil pH,
right,
of like 5 to 5.5. They need it very acidic, and that's not typically found that acidic in this part of the state. Farther north, you can find it, but not down here. I actually
We have amended our soil already, so it's ready to move that stuff over there.
Have you done a soil test since you amended?
Yeah.
What's the pH?
I'd have to ask my husband. He's not around. But
the reason why
we're aware of that because we do have azaleas on the other side as well, and they've just been fantastic. So
wonderful! You're very lucky.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, lingonberries. I've never grown lingonberries before, but it is a species that. Especially with the blueberries right now, you don't want to be moving anything that isn't fruit.
You can
really send it into shock. So I would wait after the fruiting.
Blueberries are brand new. We just stuck them in another place until we had this bed ready.
Okay.
So they're new this year as well.
Okay.
But
so
I'm just wondering if it's the shipping, if I'm going to run into shipping issues with every place that they're not going to ship this time of year.
For lingonberries, I don't know. For other plants, no. You're not going to run into issues. But, is there a local garden center or nursery near you that you can actually go and buy the plants?
Not that I found. Nobody carries them.
It's not a real common plant that we grow. I think it also needs acid soils.
Right.
But they are very delicious.
Yes, they are.
Well, and see, we had ordered a Weigelia and a couple, I'm forgetting what they were, from the same nursery, and they won't ship anything till the end of September.
Well, then they're coming from the field, probably, and this time of year, nurseries aren't digging much. They usually dig in the spring, or very early spring, and then they pick up again in the fall, late summer to fall.
So you may find that wherever you contact, whoever you contact, but, you know, it's, I suppose it's worth a try. You want to give them the best chance possible to survive, and maybe the reason they are digging when they are is because then you have the best chance for success. So,
right.
Something to think about. Thank you so much for calling. Visiting about woody ornamentals today with Laura Jell. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller for Garden Talk with Laura Jell. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Kim in River Falls posted on Facebook that she planted a magnolia tree a few weeks ago, wondering how to prepare it for winter and should she fertilize her magnolia?
Great question. Magnolias are beautiful trees. She's up in River Falls. That's getting a little north for magnolias, depending on which type of magnolia she bought. The star magnolia is probably the most hardy of the magnolias. If it's a yellow magnolia, that's also more hardy because one of the parents is zone 4 hardy of yellow magnolias. Regarding fertilization, I do not recommend it at this time because it's a newly planted tree and shrub, and you're trying to establish a new root system, and you don't want to be putting a lot of foliage on, new growth on, at the expense of root growth. So don't do any pruning at this time. I would just make sure you water it. And usually I wait a couple years before I start fertilizing. I want to get that root system developed and well established before I want to put new growth on. Magnolias are hard to transplant. They have a fleshy root system. They're a little bit difficult to move. And they're slow. I have a couple magnolias in my yard, and it took about 3 years before they started putting on new growth, and then they took off. So I would hold off.
And I know you've said in the past on the show, in terms of watering, water right up until
the ground freezes.
The ground freezes, and I think a lot of people kind of quit too early.
Yeah, and again, you want to put your hand right into that root ball, actually in the soil underneath the mulch, and you want to see if that root ball is moist. You don't want it wet. Magnolias don't like to be kept wet, but you don't want it to get dry either because they're also sensitive to drought.
Bob and Eau Claire up next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. I've got one thing to tell you before we talk about trees. I'm driving in Eau Claire on my way to my volunteer job at Mayo Hospital. I just had a pair of twin fawns just walk out like they own the road in the middle of the city.
Oh,
it's wow.
Just incredible.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a row of spruces. And, Larry, I posted this on your Facebook. So you might be able to see the picture and help describe it to Laura. These trees were probably planted somewhere around 25, 30 years ago. And I've got one spruce that's dying from the top down. And and I'd say that it's now dead about the first 5 feet.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's from overcrowding because the trees are fairly densely packed together.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah, is this a blue spruce?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly. Okay, Larry says yes.
Okay, this sounds like a disease issue. Blue spruce, I don't recommend planting blue spruce in Wisconsin. And one of the reasons why is, first of all, they're very disease susceptible. There's a couple of diseases that they get. One's called Rhizosphera, and the other is Cytospora canker. Cytospora canker usually works from the bottom of the tree. Limbs start to die and works its way up. Spruces in general need good spacing and aeration because of disease problems, especially on the blue spruce. The fact that it's dying from the top down, there could have been some insect injury higher up in the tree. You know, at this point, that tree probably will die. I don't,
yeah.
The terminal leader's gone, and that's how evergreens grow. They grow from the tips of the branches out, and when you lose the terminal leader, a side branch can become the new leader. That is possible, and I've seen it on a spruce in my yard. It was a small tree, and the birds knocked out the terminal leader, and the side branch just said, okay, it's time for me to grow up, and it did. So
okay. Well, the bad news is I think I've got a yard full of these guys.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to take that one out. It's so close. Yeah. I mean, they're so packed together.
Yeah, yeah, they don't like to be packed together at all.
Okay.
All right,
well,
good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. Pretty good-sized trees, too. Christina in Glenwood City has something for us. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I have several mature flowering crabs. I typically trim them back a third each year. Didn't get to it this year. Can I safely do so now?
Okay. First thing, why do you cut it back by a third every year?
Oh, I just like to trim them and open them up so they can get the light through and I can see the birds very well.
Okay. You really shouldn't remove more than 20-25% of the tree's canopy, any tree, at one time. By removing a third, that's 33%. That's a lot to remove in one pruning. You can actually do more harm than good by taking all those branches out. I do like that you are pruning to get better aeration because crab apples have a number of foliar diseases that they get. But I would not remove that much at one pruning.
Could she prune now?
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's not the best time of year to prune, but if there's a few, and I say few, branches that she needs to remove, yes, she can. Really, dormant season pruning is the best, but realistically, you know, I was on a landscape crew for a number of years, and if there's a branch in the way or a branch is broken, you obviously have to prune it this time of year. Do not use tree paint or wound compound. That stuff on the wound actually impedes closing of the wound by the tree. So I would avoid using that type of material.
There you go. Thanks very much, Christina, for calling. Frank in Cedarburg up next. Hi, Frank. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Have a problem. I bought an Aronia bush through the mails and planted it. Now it's grown about 3 feet high, and I'd like to propagate it. How can I propagate the Aronia bush?
Okay, I'm very familiar with Aronia, and it's probably the black fruited one.
Yes.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay, do you know if it's a cultivar?
I have no idea.
Okay, if it's the straight species, you can propagate it, but if it is a patent, where it has a plant patent cultivar. Not all cultivars are patent, but some of the newer ones have a plant patent.
Mm-hmm.
It is therefore illegal to propagate them without.
I'm familiar with it, so I do a lot of grafting also, so
okay.
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
But how do you propagate the Aronia, though?
Aronias. Let me look in my book right here. I think you can root them from stem cuttings, but let me look. It's a great plant, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty plant.
Yeah.
Pretty plant.
Beautiful fruit and flowers. I'm looking up the propagation, and I see the propagation is actually for Aronia in general, not just for the black one. And it says seeds can be stratified in moist peat for 90 days in the refrigerator. It says here, softwoods cuttings root readily. untreated cuttings taken in early summer rooted up to 92% in 6 weeks in a sand, moist sand medium. And this is from the Durr Manual of Woody Landscape.
Michael Durr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's done a lot of propagation. Yeah. So, yeah, softwood cuttings would be a great way to propagate it.
There we go. Thanks a lot, Frank, for calling. And Beth in Polk County emailed to say she has an old sugar maple that has black spots on the leaves. This happened last year, too, and the leaves fell off. They do tap for syrup. Anything wrong there?
Yeah, it sounds like tar spot.
Yeah, it sounds like that to me.
Yeah, that's classic. You see it more on Norway maple and silver maple than sugar, but they can get it. It's cosmetic, but if you want to avoid it in the future, Brian Huddleston has a wonderful fact sheet on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic's website. And if you Google UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, he has fact sheets, and that one is on there. There's also another website that has the fact sheet, and that is the Wisconsin Urban Horticulture website. The horticulture team has put together a website with many of these same publications. So if you can't find it on Brian's, I suggest going to that other one.
There we go. And that's good advice as well. Laura Jull, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals. She lives in the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's fun talking with her about caring for woody ornamentals here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Woody ornamentals likely play an important part in your garden and your lawn area, and we're talking about how to care for them today. Our guest is Laura Jull, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you listening in. Questions? Call at 800-642-1234. Send an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Laura, we have Lorraine in Appleton with a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi there. I'm going to try to get this across to you. I hope you can understand me. We have two mystery trees. One of them is has small berries on it that look like miniature blackberries. I haven't a clue. And it has very odd-shaped lobed leaves.
They're okay. Looks like a mulberry.
It sounds like a mulberry, huh?
It's a weedy tree. But the fruit is absolutely delicious.
Oh, it is. didn't know that. Didn't know there was any fruit on it until finally one smaller one took over. Is it a good tree to have around, or is it invasive?
It's invasive. It's not native.
Oh, this is on a lot where there was one for the last, 40 years before we came, so we had no idea what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, granted, I'm not 100% positive unless I see a picture, but it sounds like it's the leaves. Some leaves are lobed. Some leaves don't have any lobes. Yeah, that sounds like a mulberry,
yeah.
And the fruit really does look like blackberries.
Yeah, that is a little bit more rounder than longer, but yes, I was astounded. Now I have another problem. Also another tree that was here long ago before we came, and it weeps constantly from any little injury. If a branch has been broken off from a windstorm or anything, mm-hmm. And it has many, many little round seed cases with a seed in the center, and it doesn't appear to reseed itself. You didn't think it did because it has bushel baskets of seeds, and I don't know what it is. The only person that ever gave us a clue was Slippery Elm.
Was what? I'm sorry?
Slippery Elm.
Slippery Elm. It could be. I'd have to see the leaf and the twig with the actual buds to be able to identify it.
Okay.
What county are you in?
Allegheny, very close to Winnebago.
Yeah. You can take a picture of it, and you can always send it to your county extension agent in Allegheny County, and they will look at it and see if they know what it is, and if they don't know what it is, then they send it to me.
There you go. That's a good way to do it. Thank you so much for calling, Lorraine. Good luck. Appreciate your call. I want to give Dave and Eau Claire a chance to join us. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Laura.
Hey.
About 25 years ago, I made the mistake of planting about 30 Janala maples along our road for mm-hmm. a screen based on what I'd read about them in some seed catalogs. They were beautiful red foliage in the fall. They made a nice screen about 12 feet tall. They are now, but they're prolific seed producers, and they have now invaded a, mm-hmm. a field next to mine, and
yep.
I was just wondering what the best way to get rid of them. If
well, unfortunately, Amur maple, which is some catalogs put it as Acer Janala, others actually it's a subspecies of the Tartarian maple. Regardless, it's a very invasive plant. I don't recommend planting them unless it's in like a downtown environment in a contained location, like a above ground container or something. I don't recommend it for most homeowners because of the massive amount of seed that is produced. It flies away and can quickly take over a field.
I would agree.
Yeah, it's horrible. With regard to that, how to get rid of them, a systemic herbicide, like something that has glyphosate in it.
I did try Roundup on even some smaller ones that were maybe 3 and 4 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
By the way, some of them are 12 feet tall, and there's probably hundreds of them.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But the Roundup didn't even touch the even smaller ones.
One of the best times of year to do this, first of all, and I know it's labor-intensive, but cutting the stump, cutting it close to the soil,
okay.
and then immediately treat it with systemic herbicide. And I'm not a herbicide expert. I've used glyphosate, which is basically Roundup, and other products that have glyphosate in it. And by doing it on a cut stump in the fall, as the carbohydrates are going, you know, back to the root system, you can get pretty good kill on some of them. There are other products labeled for brush control. I don't know the names of them personally. That's kind of out of my area of expertise. But doing it in the fall is a good time of year to do it. And I would do it to the whole field. I know it's a lot of work, but you know, Amur maple is a horribly invasive species.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. A little work ahead of you there, Dave.
Thanks a lot there, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Terry and Madison, up to you now. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Last year, I moved from an old home to a new home in the fall, and we transplanted raspberry plants. They were very small, but they're cutting up great this spring. But something seems to be happening. Either we have a varmint, or something's happening to the plants, because we're finding the tops, after they're about 20 inches tall, the tops actually have fruit and leaves, and the tops are starting to fall off.
You mean break off?
Yes, break off. It looks like it's like on a slant. So
mm-hmm.
it's like something's either crunched through it, or we just don't know. You know, we have lots of rabbits, but seeing that they're so tall, there seems to be falling off at least about 8 inches towards the top, all tops.
Mm-hmm. What I would do is take a sample of it and go to your county extension office and have them look at it. And very often they may not know what it is, and they can send it to... It could be a disease, it could be an insect, sending it to a plant disease diagnostic clinic, and if Brian looks at it and determines it's not a disease, he'll give it to P.J. Leisch, who replaced Phil Pelletieri. P.J. runs the insect diagnostic lab. They're both in the same building. And I can begin to speculate what is happening to your raspberry without seeing it. But I would always send it to those two first to see, you know, if it's a disease or an insect.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you for calling. And Marcia in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. My difficulties, I have a rose bush, and it's
The cultivar is nearly wild, so it's mm-hmm. the single petal roses, mm-hmm. or not single petal, but single layer of petals.
Mm-hmm.
The first bloom is gorgeous, and then what happens is that the leaves almost look lacy, so I don't know if something's eating them, but mm-hmm. they get brown
yeah.
and they have lots of holes in them.
Mm-hmm. Everything loves roses.
Yeah.
yeah.
I saw my first Japanese beetle last week, and Japanese beetles love roses, along with many other plants. It could be due to a skeletonizing insect. It could be, I don't know if you're in a sandy soil area, rose chafers. Don't know if they're out yet. PJ would be the one, but it sounds like something is eating your rose, an insect. The best thing to do is if you can find the insect or catch it in action, take a picture of it and send it to your county extension agent or PJ Leisch at the insect identification clinic. Again, this is all online. Google UW-Madison Department of Entomology for PJ's lab or the Department of Plant Pathology for Brian's lab,
mm-hmm.
who does diseases.
And a photo, and you probably
yep.
get pretty good, pretty quick results.
Yeah.
Good luck. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, those Japanese beetles are...
I
quit
them.
Roses for that very reason.
I did, too, and I love roses. I've been
yeah.
growing roses since I was a kid, literally. I took over my mother's roses after she passed away, and I just fell in love with them. But, boy, Japanese beetles really make me angry.
Speaking of roses, Paula on Facebook wonders how much rotted horse manure she can put around each of her rose bushes and how thick should it be?
You know, I've never personally used horse manure. The problem with horse manure is weed seeds. You could have a lot of weed seeds in that horse manure. Now, if it's fully composted, it heats up. You may have less less weed seeds in the manure. I would apply no more than a couple inches at most. It's going to heat up, and hopefully it doesn't stink anymore. Your neighbors may not be too fond of you, but I would, you know, an inch or about an inch and a half.
Okay. There we go. And there are some open lines. We're going to go to Ken and Verona next, but there's a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Ken and Verona, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Yes, wondering if it is too early to trim up my yews. I think they're Toxus Intermedia. I keep them trimmed every year, so I'm only talking about the new growth. I always trim them off kind of midsummer. Do you think it's too early in the Madison area?
What is the plant?
Yews.
Oh, yews.
I think it's Toxus Intermedia, if I remember
Taxus.
Correctly.
Yep. Yeah, I'm very familiar with Taxus. Taxus can be pruned after a growth flush, and what you don't want to take it all the way back to where it originated. You want to leave
sure.
a little bit of growth so that it
right.
you know flushes properly next year. But, yeah, you can prune Taxus now after the growth flush, but I probably would stop in September.
Okay.
Right. Yep. It looks like the growth has completed. You know, it's lighter green and it's
yeah, fresh, exactly.
Not and too early.
Okay. I've pruned millions of yews over my years, and we would just actually, if you can have like an apron with a big pocket, what we used to do is we hand prune. I'm a big proponent of hand pruning versus shearing into meatballs. But hand pruning looks more natural, and you can take those clippings and put it right in your pocket of an apron or even tie a trash bag around your waist, and it makes cleanup so much easier.
Oh, absolutely. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks very much.
Pat on Facebook has a fairly old flowering almond. She wants to know how much pruning is okay for that, an almond.
Okay, marginally hardy, depending on which species it is. There's a couple. One's a fruit-producing, and those typically are not grown in Wisconsin. And then there's the Russian flowering almond. I would do it in the dormant season because it is a prunus
meaning it's a cherry, plum, almond, peach. They're all in the same genus. And they're very prone to diseases. I would do it in the dormant season, and I would remove no more than 20% of the canopy.
Steve on Facebook wonders if a Japanese black pine would be hardy in West Allis. If not, is there something similar shape?
I'm very familiar with that species. It is very borderline hardy. I would not recommend it because it has a lot of disease problems. And out east, where they do grow Japanese black pine, they're short-lived because of many insect and disease problems. I do not recommend it. There's far more pines out there that are very beautiful.
Anything with a similar shape that would work?
You're looking for pyramidal, I imagine. Oh, there's the Swiss stone pine, which is soft needles. There's the Bosnian pine, which has very sharp needles and very slow growing, but I personally think it's a very beautiful tree. There's, you know, of course, our native white pine, but that gets big pretty quickly, which I think is a good thing. It's a wonderful tree as long as your soil's well drained and not too not too high of a pH. But yeah, there's many other plants, but you're not going to find Japanese black pine really available here. It's just not hardy enough.
Bob in Iola, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, first I want to congratulate you on being one of the best, smartest guests that Larry's had on plants ever.
Jeez,
I've been following the show almost 40 years, as long as Larry has. Anyway, I have a bunch of elm trees, American elm.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the last 35 years or so, I've lost about half of them, which I think to Dutch elm.
Yeah.
The other half are some doing real well, some not. I'm looking for a natural genetic resistance in the ones that are left. Any chance?
Yeah. Well, Dutch elm disease is transferred not only by the bark beetle, but also root grafts. And having them close to each other, probably it's just a matter of time, perhaps, before that tree is infected. It could be possibly a genetic anomaly, meaning that it is more resistant. And we have found in the Midwest some trees that are actually resistant. That doesn't mean immune. So it can get it. It just is much less susceptible. If I remember, I think it's Lewis and Clark is the cultivar mm-hmm. of American elm that they found in, I think it's Minnesota. I'd have to look it up, but there are some, possibly. But
yeah, there's a Liberty elm, too. But,
yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's more than this is just the
last one. Would a root cutting work here, Laura?
For elm? Let me look that up. I'm not sure for root cuttings. Most American elms are produced by seed, but that runs the genetic playground when it comes to reorganization of genes. You may not get
that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, you want the exact same plant. So you would need to do it clonally or vegetatively. And let me just quickly, if you have a sec, look
sure.
this
I'm,
up.
Sure, I'm in no rush.
And
I was trying to remember, I know for, seems to me I recall that you can come, somebody can come in with a, oh, a trencher, so to speak, and cut those roots, and that helps prevent the spread from one root to the next, from one tree to the next.
Yeah, I'm looking in my DIRS book. It says cuttings can be rooted, taken in early June, with rooted 94% with an IBA, which is a rooting hormone treatment. Strong juvenility is evident in the cuttings collected from stump sprouts. Obviously, your tree is not a stump.
Well, again, there's 20 of them, so
yeah.
The range.
Yeah.
I was thinking of trying to prevent the spread from one tree to the next.
Yeah, yeah, that's important because if your tree's nearby, they root graft, and one tree can be infected, and you don't see any symptoms yet, and then the next year they're dead.
Would you cut this time of year? I've got one tree maybe 20 feet high, one of the smaller ones, that's 50% dead this last week. Before that, showing no signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you cut that tree this time of year? Would you wait?
Well, if it's dead, you can cut it. 50%. But you also need if you're trying to save some other trees, you need to break the root grafts. And that's where you need to hire a certified arborist to come in with a machine that actually cuts the roots. There's actually a formula. UW Extension has a very good publication on Dutch elm disease. Brian Huddleston has one on his website as well. And it talks about the how far out you need to go before you start saving the trees, meaning if it's within a certain radius of the tree that died, chances are that those trees are affected with Dutch elm disease. There are other disease issues that elms get. There's a whole bunch of them. It's unfortunately our great majestic American elm has a lot of insect and disease issues.
Yeah, but it's worth looking into. I'd grab a copy of that publication and just go to thelearningstore.uwex.edu.
Yeah, and there's also a product that can be used. It's called ArborTech, and that is restricted use pesticide. It's actually injected into the trunk of the tree. It's not something a homeowner can do, and it's not sprayed all over the place. It's directly applied to the root flare, and it's no effect on other wildlife nearby because it's injected right into the tree. So I
think your advice about a certified arborist is a good one at this point, especially with all those elms. That's a lot of that's a lot of trees.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Bob. Thanks. And George in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hello. Early part of the June, we purchased four Western arborvitae to have planted in our backyard, and the nursery came and did that. And oddly, one of the trees, the top 2 feet of it is severely bent, about maybe 25, 30 degrees, and it wasn't that way when we chose it at the nursery. Anyway, the guys who planted it said, don't worry, it'll straighten itself out. And I just want to know if that's correct information, or do we need to do something?
This is interesting. So when they were actually installing it, it was already crooked?
Yeah. Needless to say, we wouldn't have chosen a crooked tree at the nursery.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
How long ago was this?
Early part of June, we had it done.
I would ask them to replace it.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, that's not what you picked. It's a lower quality product, and if you're paying for it, you should get what you paid for, right?
Yeah.
And then regarding, don't worry, it'll come back. It'll take a while for that to happen. And quite frankly, if it's broken, I don't know if you can see if it's actually broken. It sounds like it. If it's got that much of a lean, that will die probably.
Yeah.
It may close its wound, but you always have some, not always, but for quite a while, you'll have a disfigured looking plant. And if you're paying money for it, I would ask for a new one.
And thanks for calling, Laura. We are out of time. Thank you so much and for being with us today. I really appreciate it. You did a wonderful job, as always.
Thanks, Larry. I love doing this.
We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Okay.
Laura Gell, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Great to have her along. Monday at this time, we'll be talking with the authors of two great cookbooks, one on pizza, the other on American comfort food. So I hope you'll join us then. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.